Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman. Good evening, everyone. This is Jennifer Hellman. I'm sorry, I used Jen Virginia in my readings. I've been doing a lot today. Today is Thursday, and today I have a wonderful guest. I have Kate Arnold, who is a certified hand analysis. She is certified through the International Institute of Hand Analysis, trained by Beth Davis, who is the master of doing it. She's done hundreds of hands of people of all ages. She also is a massage therapist who has been involved with the healing arts just about all her adult life. She also is currently coaching women in recovery, using hand analysis as a tool to help them move forward beyond where they find themselves stuck and looking for changes within themselves. So, Kate, and it's always a pleasure and honor to speak with you on the phone, and I actually was blessed to meet you face-to-face recently, and that was a real honor as well.
Thanks, Jennifer. It was great to meet you, too. I appreciate you having me on again.
So, as I just mentioned, Kate and I did meet in Tucson. She was here for a workshop, and I went over, I met and talked to her for a couple hours, and she actually took my handprints, and today she's going to reveal what she saw in my fingertips. But before she gets to that, I wanted to go over briefly exactly a little more about hand analysis and what it can really show people.
Okay. Hand analysis is really a scientific version of what we have previously thought of as palmistry. A lot of the aspects of traditional palmistry are brought into hand analysis, but it is not done in a predictive manner. Many different aspects, such as the shape of the hand, the length of the fingers, the way they relate to each other, the color of the hand if you're seeing the hand in person, where the mounds are most prominent, you know, the basic lines, the head line, the heart line, and the life line, as well as the gift markings, are all things that are used both in traditional palmistry and in hand analysis, but they're viewed a little differently in hand analysis. When I take a print of someone's hand, it's like a snapshot in time of where they're at. The fingerprints don't change, so it's really important that I get those clearly printed. If someone's hand doesn't print, you know, 100%, I can still glean a ton of information from it. But it's really important for me when I am working with someone to have the fingerprints. There are four basic kinds of fingerprints, and according to where they are, on which fingers, and how many of them, of which kinds, reveal a specific information that doesn't change, because our fingerprints don't change. I'm sure there are a few criminals that wish their fingerprints would change, but fingerprints don't change. And what we're born with is basically a map of where our most evolved skills and our lessons lie. Each finger has an archetypal energy, so we correlate the meaning according to which finger they're on. And the thumb, by the way, isn't actually considered a finger. It's a digit. So that has its own meaning. It's not within that archetypal range per se. So that's a little bit of an overview about hand analysis. The fingerprints are the one piece that is used in this scientific system that I don't believe there are other systems that use. And to me, it was brilliant. Richard Unger, who came up with this, just had been studying various other palmists and the way they worked, and somehow was drawn to know that the fingerprints were a key that really revealed very specific information, because we each have our own set that nobody else has.
So basically, is that what hand analysis really does, is focus on the fingerprints? Because I've had my hands read by palm readers, and they've never looked at my fingertips.
Yeah, I...
Is that a major difference?
That's where I start. That's where I start. That's the major difference. The other aspects that palm readers and palmists use are also brought into hand analysis. They're just not done in a predictive manner. You know, there's no prediction about how many children you're going to have. The heart line, for instance, is something that people are often, you know, very interested in. Because we're, you know, a society that's real interested in our relationships, and people seem to think that the heart line is going to reveal when they're going to find their next true love, or, you know, if they're going to find their next true love, or how many times they're going to be married. And it really, the heart line is about your relationship style and how you can best identify how you relate to others. And it's not just your sweetheart, it's people in your life in general, how you relate to them, how people see you. And I think it's a pretty important thing for people to be clear with other people about what that style is. I think people have, you know, when you meet somebody, especially if it's a love relationship and you're attracted to someone, it's real easy just to see what you want to see. And yet, there are these little indicators that, you know, some people, for instance, there's this kind of heart line that shows that some people really need more alone time than other people. And, you know, they may try to satisfy their partner's need for more togetherness, but then they're not being true to themselves. So it's not fair to either person. But if a person says, you know, this is really the way I am, and, you know, I love to spend time with you, but I really need my alone time, and I really need to, you know, take my walks and do my meditation, and don't take it personally. If you can put that kind of stuff out on the table right in the beginning, that's a better start than just trying to meet the other person's needs. And then there's the other sorts of, you know, there's, you know, many, many variations. That's just one particular one that I'm pretty familiar with, and from my own personal life and my own personal relationships. And then there's the person that just loves to talk about feelings, and it's a need. It's not just something that they do. It's something that really feeds them, that they really need to do. And other times, you know, there are people that demand a lot of attention. It's, you know, they want to be this in the center stage, and they expect to be adored. They expect to be treated in that particular way. And these are the extremes. And, you know, we all have a little bit of a lot of this in us. Or, you know, most of us are not, it's not simple A, B, C, D. But just having that kind of self-understanding and being able to share it with the people that we're close with, and you know, I think there's something pretty powerful in being able to look at your hand and have it pointed out to you. This is what I'm seeing and where, and this is you know, how you can be more true to yourself. And some people aren't really that interested in the details. They just want to know, tell me what it says, and that's it. They could care less where they see it, you know, and all that. But for those that do, obviously I do, or I wouldn't have gotten involved in hand analysis if I didn't care about these kinds of things.
Now, the lines on the left hand versus the right hand can be different. Do they have different meanings?
Yeah, the left hand tends to be more your personal inner life, whereas your right hand is more how you present in the world, how you're seen, and how you express more in the...
In the outer world, huh?
In the outer world, in that arena, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean,
so
a lot of people are pretty convinced that that's not the way it is, but I'm pretty convinced that that is the way it is. I mean, we have the left brain and right brain, and then we know that they do two different things, whether you're left-handed or right-handed. Oriental medicine takes the, you know, in visual diagnosis, the left hand and the right, the left part of your face versus the right part of your face. It all has a, you know, different meaning, and it isn't just whether you're left-handed or right-handed.
Very cool. So, is there any other basic information that the audience should be aware of before we get started?
Let's see.
I mean, what areas are you going to be covering in this reading?
Well, I was going to talk to you about with your handprints. Just, I was going to touch on the schools and explain what they are, and talk to you about what school you are in and how that may show up in your life.
Okay, what do you mean by school?
Okay,
let's just get a definition by that.
Okay, the school is the backdrop for your life. It's I have read another hand analyst use the term the umbrella of consciousness. I kind of like to think of it as the scenery on the stage. And the analogy that I use is if you are going to a large university and there is perhaps a school of art, the school of education, school of engineering, school of nursing, whatever the schools are that people are attending, everyone's going to take some math or other, for instance, during the course of their studies. But what specific way they're going to study it and how they would use that in their life is going to vary according to what school they're in. We all, as human beings, experience similar trials and tribulations, grief, joy, challenges of work, challenges of relationships. According to what school we are in will say a lot about how these things are going to show up and how we're going to work through them. So there's four basic schools. However, some people may be in more than one school. Most people are not, but I just want to say that there are, I would say probably maybe a little less than 10% of the people I read for are in two schools, but 90% or more are just in one school. And the school is determined by which kind of fingerprints you have and how many of them you have. Some people have four different kinds of fingerprints, four basic kinds of fingerprints. Mostly not. Most people have one, two, or three different kinds of fingerprints. So that's you know, a general explanation of what the schools are. I'll just name what the four schools are. And this is just, you know, like the abbreviated name. I'll talk a little bit more about each school as we go along, and I'll focus on yours. There's the school of service, the school of love, the school of wisdom, and the school of peace. People always jump to conclusions about what this means, and they say, oh, I hope I'm in, you know, whatever school they perceive to carry whatever meaning they perceive they have. And the school of service is the school where if you are in this school, you're going to be experiencing the joy of being of service in whatever way that is when you're on your master path. It's not about the results. I mean, there's a million different ways people are of service. Some people think, I remember reading from one woman who thought, when I said that, the first thing she thought of was like being a waitress, and she would never do that, you know. But yet she is a life coach, and she really was of service to her clients, for sure. I mean, we all have ways that we're of service in the world. But because that is the school, that's where the focus is. And for people that are in the school of service, when they are being challenged, they tend to do things for the wrong reasons because they feel as though they have to. Because that's what's expected of them, and they're not serving themselves first. Someone in the school of service who is really on their master path understands that they have to take care of themselves first or they can't help anybody else. And that's how they are of service to the world, is serving themselves first, then others or their community, and that in turn is their service to the world. Does that make any sense to you? You there, Jennifer?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. I thought I lost you for a minute. Okay.
Nope.
Okay, so that's the school of service. The school of love is also known as the school of emotional authenticity. And for the person in the school of love, their job is to be as emotionally authentic at all times, to spread their love in a very real way. It's very common for people in the school of love when they're challenged to, try to please other people by saying what they think they want to hear. And people in the school of love are usually great connectors, great networkers. It just comes very natural to them. And the challenge is accepting their own emotions and being able to say what they mean in the appropriate way, you know, without sugarcoating things, without, you know, being honest, but not necessarily brutally honest. But a lot of people in the school of love, when they're being challenged, are way too much in their head about how they say it, and really analyzing that rather than just being able to come from their heart and speak their truth. And that happens to be the school that you're in, and we'll talk more about that. We'll have a little dialogue about how the joys and the challenges show up in your life.
Okay.
Because, we all have both. You know, nothing's 100%. In the school of wisdom, people in the school of wisdom are very interesting. They really have generally a lot of knowledge. Not that they're necessarily wiser than the next person, but they are often challenged about their decision-making process. So being in this school really means to be a participant, not an observer. And being willing to take a risk, to make a decision, act on it, go for it, and see what happens. Not be so invested in, gee, should I do this? Should I do that? It's just taking things as a whole and making a decision with what they know to move forward. And just not have to overanalyze every nitpicking little thing before they jump. They can be the quintessential fence sitter. And yet, you know, sometimes people in the school of wisdom can be a little impulsive too. You know, like just, I'm just going to make a decision. I don't care what it is, and just go. And you know, there's a balance there for people in the school of wisdom to really, you know, use that strong mind that they have and be able to make an educated decision, but make a decision and then act on it. And the last school is the school of peace. And for people in the school of peace, their joy is found through just really experiencing life on earth in their body in a safe, grounded way. It's not unusual to have people in the school of peace when they're challenged just really want to zone out and not feel here, you know, not be in their body. So their mission is to feel safe in their physical body here on earth, and making that balance between work and enjoyment and really living life. Sometimes people in the school of peace will, you know, experience a more than average amount of stress and panic. And sometimes they can get a little overly caught up in work. So, you know, it's a lot about balance with people in the school of peace, of really finding the time for the people in their life for fun and work, as well as their spiritual pursuits, but without being caught up in that, you know, airy fairy land of escapism that can sometimes come along. Someone that's really on the master path in the school of peace will definitely exhibit, you know, you'll get a sense that they are grounded and really very balanced. So.
Okay, can I ask you a question that just popped in my head?
Sure, absolutely.
With these schools, is there a tendency to be attracted to people, and you might not know the answer, but I'm going to ask anyway, be attracted to a certain group? Like, is people who basically are in the school of love typically go to people that are at peace, or is there an equal balance of attraction between them, or do they, you know?
I haven't really found that, Jennifer.
I was just curious if you had any insights on that kind of thing.
I haven't really found that, because it's the most general arena of the fingerprint analysis. It's really a starting point, and I tend to find more about people from their heart line, as far as who they're attracted to. And there's actually indicators on the hands sometimes, lines coming from the heart line that indicate what sort of people they are attracted to. You know, if there are some, there are some people that have a line coming off their heart line that indicate that they're attracted to strong, powerful people. And often that's because they're not acknowledging their own power. I will, on those same people's hands, see indicators that they have a lot of personal power. But somehow they're not in touch with it. I want to tell a little story. When I was studying with Beth Davis in Tucson, there was a, you know, relatively small class. I can't remember how many were in the class. It was maybe 10 people, maybe 8 or 9. And we met for a long intensive, you know, a week-long intensive at one point. And we talked a lot about the heart lines. That was one of the subjects that we were talking about, you know, as well as all the other aspects of the hands. And then we met again in another, I don't know, month or 2 months. I don't really remember. It wasn't a really long time. And one of the women in the class had actually had a measurable change during that time in her heart line. I mean, we looked at it. We reprinted our hands between those two times just to, you know, see if there were any changes. And in this woman's hand, there was actually a measurable difference. And she had actually changed her, you know, inner chemistry about the way she was dealing with her relationships. And a lot of that I seem to remember was because of some things that she had discovered, you know, through having her hands read, through studying hand analysis, and had, you know, made some decisions about. And it just blew my mind to actually see that there was a difference in that short of a period of time. I've been told that lines really can change overnight. I have not seen it, but I did see that, you know, within a very short period of time, a difference in that. And I also understand that, you know, gift markings can appear out of nowhere and can also disappear. So,
yeah, if you don't use the gift, it will disappear, right?
No, not necessarily.
Really?
Not necessarily. The most of the gift markings, and there were a couple of exceptions, also have a penalty when they're not used. And actually, if anybody is interested in that, I have a short article that I've written, and there's a link to it somehow. I think I'm redoing my website now, but I think if you go to the Contact Me button, there's a place where you can, the next page, sign up for my free article, which talks about some of the gift markings and what some of the penalties are. So, yeah, it's not, I mean, someone can be plagued by having a gift that they're not using.
Before we go on, just real quick, since you mentioned it, and I failed to mention it in your intro, Kate, we are talking to Kate Arnold, and her website is handwisdom.com. So if you want to check out more information about her and see about getting these articles, I do highly recommend you go to handwisdom.com. Just wanted to get that out there before I forget yet again. And I apologize.
That's
so,
okay. And I'm going to, I'll just tell people now in case somebody doesn't stay for the whole show. I have, I'm going to offer people a very brief analysis just of the life school if they're interested. I'll send out a information about that and a special offer for people listening to this radio show, so you can just, you know, send me your contact information and let me know that you heard about me through this radio
air
show, and I'll send you the information about that.
Just put air in the, you know.
Yeah, that's,
and I think
good.
That's the easiest way to just put air.
Right.
And if it capitalize all the letters, you'll know it's Abstract Illusion Radio.
Right. And there's also a place to ask questions, and I'll I'll get back to you as best I can, depending on how much help I have in my office. And
yes,
but I will answer anybody that does write to me.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Now, I've got a question about the woman you were talking about with
mm-hmm.
the heartline that changed.
Mm-hmm.
You said that she had made some decisions about her relationship. Was she in the wisdom school by any chance?
You know, I don't recall.
Okay. I was
really
just curious
that,
because that's all about making decisions. So I was just wondering if she...
No, you know, I think she may have been in the school of love as I remember. I can remember the shape of her hands. She was actually a professional musician and a life coach. I can remember the shape of her hands. It's so funny. I can picture her clear as day. And I think she was in the school of love. And I think maybe for her, part of it was that she had not been 100% authentic with her emotions, and that she had felt as though she had to fulfill some role that she had sort of fallen into in her relationship, and was, maybe not being. I'm sure that she wasn't being fully expressive of who she was. And as she was able to get clear about that and really know that, the more I think about it, the more it makes sense to me that she was probably in the school of love. So, her challenge was, and I'm sharing this with you because this is your school, Jennifer,
right.
is to really know that whatever emotions and feelings you have, that they're 100% valid, and that not to second guess yourself and not to feel as though you have to hold back. I mean, for some people, believe it or not, and I don't run into too many people like this, but I know there are those people that, darn it, they have trouble expressing their joy because, you know, they were judged at some
mm-hmm.
point in their life, and they learned to shut that down. They learned that, you know, it wasn't acceptable, or it isn't acceptable, and they're in a family of stodgy old, Puritans that they don't want to have any fun, and yet this person is full of, you know, joy and excitement, and they have really lost touch with themselves because of allowing themselves to be put in that box that their family has relegated them to stay in.
Well, I can let you know that since you wanted a conversation about this, and since we brought up the school of love again, I had a huge shift about that very issue. When I was growing up, I was very much what everybody wanted. I was all about pleasing others and not really expressing myself. And I mentioned this before. It's on the show to the audience that literally growing up, my friends did not realize that I could talk. When I was in kindergarten school, I was talking to my mom when she was walking me home, and one of my classmates actually turned around and said, "What? She's not mute? She can talk?"
Really?
And she, yeah. And he was amazed, because that's how quiet and shy I was. And obviously, now that I'm on a radio show, I have changed quite a bit. And it actually floored my family tremendously, because it was like a 180. I was speaking my truth, standing up for myself in ways that they didn't necessarily like, nor did they want to accept. But now things have shifted, and they really appreciate me for who and what I am and what I've gone through. But yes, I agree, there was a huge shift in me. And I'm sure my sister Betsy is listening, shaking her head, said, yes, that's true. because it was a huge shift. And now I really do speak from my heart. If I feel appreciation and love for someone, I tell them. I don't hold back. If there's something I don't like about somebody, I do speak it, and I try and do my best. I really do my best to do it in a loving way.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that if there's something that bothers me, I will say lovingly one or two times, but the third time, I literally get a different tone in my voice, and they know I'm dead serious.
Yeah. Yeah.
And generally, if they continue, they're gone. They're not in my life anymore. I figure three strikes, you're out. If you're not going to appreciate and respect me, you're gone. But yes, it there definitely is a huge shift. I do agree with you on being a good networker. I am a good connector with people. If I listen to people, what they do, what they need, and if I know somebody, I definitely connect them up. And I love doing that. I get a lot of joy in doing that.
Yeah, it's very juicy for you.
It really is. And that's why I love this show, because I'm connecting my guest with an audience. Mm-hmm. And it means so much to me to really help promote other people that I think are fantastic and need to get their message and their services out there.
Yeah, it's a great service that you do.
So,
you know,
so go on.
Go. No, you. I just wanted to also say that, you know, for people in the School of Love, it's really remarkable how much a difference there is when they allow themselves the self-care and the self-nurturing. You know, it's that's the self-love that the person in the School of Love really will flourish with. And you know, I should have perhaps mentioned as I went along that each school has an elemental correlation as well, and the School of Love is the water element. Shouldn't be too.
That fits, since, you know, water equals emotions.
Yeah, absolutely. Water, heart, emotion, and yeah, I mean, you're just naturally a networker and a connector. It's not even anything you think about a lot of the time. It just comes so naturally to you that you do it. It's like breathing.
Yeah. And okay, since we're doing this, the School of Service, what is the element for that?
Well, what would you think would be the School of Service for that? Take a wild guess.
I'm thinking of tarot cards for some reason. Would it be Pentacles? Would it be? Because I'm really thinking that. Are you talking like air, water, fire?
Yeah.
And is it fire and metal? Or what it is?
It's air. It's air for service. And that's, you know, the spirit mind. Because the people in the School of Service, it isn't about the action so much. It's the consciousness of serving. It's the consciousness of, you know, doing what's right, doing what makes them feel good, and it isn't about the results. It's just of the enjoyment of the service, the enjoyment of the action. And as I said before, the challenge for people in the School of Service is not doing things from a place of obligation or servitude. It's not uncommon for someone who's in a challenged place in the School of Service to find themselves way overcommitted and feeling as though they're doing the right thing. You know, because that's just what they've always done, is give, and they're not necessarily doing it for the right reasons. They're doing it because, well, you know, it's my best friend, and how can I say no? Or, you know, it's my mother, or, you know, whatever, or Well, if I don't do it, who's going to do it? I've always been the bake sale chair for the PTA or whatever. And, you know, when they first did it, maybe they really enjoyed it. But, you know, life has changed, and it's just become something that they feel as though they have to do, and they continue to do it. And they're, through that, not serving themselves. So that's, you know, that's the challenging. You know, we all go on and off the master path and the student path, as I was taught to call it. You know, I mean, and we can do it several times in the same day.
Right.
And the good news about being on the student path is that when you feel uncomfortable, then you get the clues to hop on and get back on the master path. You know, it's like people's life lessons in their fingerprints. They're really a blessing. They're really a gift. I have to say that one of the things that was, when I first had my hands analyzed, and that was by Beth Davis in 2000, it was life-changing for me in that there were a lot of things about myself that I had been denying myself that mm-hmm. she nailed. And then to know that my life lessons were right there in my fingertips, and that I had been, you know, telling myself these stories. And the world had been in agreement, you know, I'd been hearing this from other places about things about myself that I found in, that she found in my hands, that to know that these were life lessons that I was going to keep bumping up against,
mm-hmm.
and the sooner that I got over myself and started manifesting my purpose and really owning my gifts and owning my purpose, the less loud those lessons were going to be. They're going to keep coming up. They come up
right.
a lot. But the more I am really living my purpose, the less problematic they are. I'm not tripping over myself in
right.
quite the same way. And while we're talking about the schools and the elements, the school of wisdom is connected to the fire element. So, you know, it's connected to the transformation and action, as opposed to the other side, the challenging side of the stagnation and the indecision. So, you know, quick action, but not too quick, not overly
right.
quick. And then peace is the earth element, as I said before. Someone who's on the master's path in the school of peace you'll feel their groundedness and their balance, and their reality of being safe in their body and in this world as we know it. Doesn't mean that they don't have any spiritual connection. It just means that they have really found their place here, and they're comfortable with it. We're holistic beings. We have mental, physical, and spiritual sides. So that's you know, that goes without saying. But for people in the school of peace to really be grounded and feeling safe and at home here, in, you know, wherever their life brings them, and just knowing that they are safe
mm-hmm.
is a real gift.
So, just to make sure that people understand, the schools are located in
on
the fingertips.
Yeah, they're found through the fingerprints, and the schools are determined by which fingerprints you have and how many you have. It's not about placement. The life lesson and the life purpose are determined by placement of which fingerprints you have, which types of fingerprints you have. Some, and just, you know, to throw out a little more information, some people have all the same kind of fingerprints on all their hands.
Did I have all the same on mine, or was it a mixture?
No, you had a mixture. I said it had it on all their hands, though they have four hands. But no, on all their fingertips. But to look at them closely, there's always going to be some variations. But people with all the same kind of fingerprints, that's part of who they are. You know,
right.
There's information in that. Some people, I happen to have fingerprints that pretty much mirror each other. My pinky fingers are the same. My ring fingers are the same. My middle finger, my pointer, and my thumbs are pretty much the same. There's very slight variation on my middle fingers, but you know, to someone just taking a quick look, they go, yeah, that looks like that. Yeah, that looks like that. And some people have just, you know, one or two of one, and all the rest of them are something else. So there's, you know, the possibilities are infinite. Just as, you know, for every loop fingerprint, that's one person's loop, there's, you know, an infinite number of variables within that. That's why they're used in crime detection as identifiers, because they are so unique. You look at them and you can, they can look pretty darn similar, but the closer you look, the more differences you can see.
Yes. Now was there anything else that really stuck out that you found interesting in my hands?
Anything else that was interesting in your hands? I don't have your prints in front of me because I took my glasses off. But I remember that there was a lot of creativity. I believe that, and I don't remember which finger that I identified. And I think we talked about this a little bit when I saw you in Tucson.
Right.
But, you know, that artistry, which some people have a hard time with that word, artist, but creativity, artistry, it is part of your purpose to be out there in the world expressing and creating and having an audience of some sort. You know, you literally do it on the radio.
Yes.
You know, and some people with artistry is part of their life purpose. You know, paint gorgeous pictures. Some people dance. Some people are in the healing arts.
Mm-hmm.
Some salesmen are actually artists, and they're very unique and creative in the way they do their selling. And artists tend to be the sort of person who knows that they are an individual, who knows that they're unique, and is pretty darn happy being that individual and being unique. Sometimes it's more challenging for them when they're younger, which brings me to a point that I, you know, will make, is that some people say, well, how, you know, can you read a kid's, is that really right to read kids' hands? And I certainly believe it is. Because that fingerprint information is not going to change. And if that child has, you know, a purpose, say, of leader on their fingertips, and they tend to be, you know, a willful child who's, you know, loud and, you know, acting out in school, I think if it were my child, it would be helpful to know that they're really meant to be a leader and to help them challenge that leadership ability that they have instead of trying to squelch it down. So, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said for helping a child to recognize their strengths and really supporting it, encouraging it, and then letting it unfold as it will. because, you know, for instance, you know, artistry is a great example. There's so many different ways that artistry can express itself.
Well, yes, I'm also a poet. Mm-hmm. I also do photography, and I also do the healing arts.
Mm. Yeah, not surprising.
So, and I have a degree in graphic design.
Wow. Yeah, that's not surprising at all. And, you know, for someone who has artistry as part of their purpose, it's extremely important to have a mentor of some mm-hmm. sort who is going to, more than being a director of how you express yourself and, you know, where you're going to go with your career or whatever, is more of a cheerleader, who's somebody who really can recognize you for who you are and see your unique creativity and just support you, and has had some similar experiences themselves. I think sometimes people, when they hear that word mentor, they think, okay, so I'm going to find somebody who's really experienced and I'm going to do what they tell me to do. And that mm-hmm. isn't my understanding of what a good mentor is meant to do, especially for the artist. In some other fields, maybe more so, but especially not for the artist, that they really need a mentor who is just there to support them and, you know, really, you know, share with them for sure where they've been and how they got there, but not to direct and push and point and prod. So for you, Jennifer, I would just suggest that if you don't have somebody like that, and sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's a coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's a supportive coach. Because, you know, the coaching is a big buzzword these days, and there are all kinds of coaches doing all kinds of work. So.
Yes, indeed. And it's amazing how fast and how much information you've done in this very quick hour. Yes, it's almost done.
I just looked at the clock.
And it's just like, okay. So really quick, I do want to say that Kate Arnold will do kind of she'll let you know what school you're in, if you're interested, by going to her website, writing her, and please put AIR somewhere in the email. You heard her on AIR and you're interested in her offer, and she will get back in touch with you with that. Her website, again, is handwisdom.com, and she does have she's very accurate. It was interesting when we were talking before, anyone in astrology, my north node is in Leo. So everything that my fingerprints said is confirmed also by my north node.
Mm.
So I thought that was amazing.
As it should be. I remember when I was first studying, and I would come home and I looked at, you know, at my daughter's fingerprints, and she had recently had an astrology reading, and she was just aghast at the fact that there were so many things that I said that her astrology reading had also revealed. I mean, they're two completely different things, but there are always lots of incredible parallels, which to me is very reassuring.
I mean, we often, as humans, you know, are looking for that confirmation, and this really does it.
Yeah.
So I thank you very much for staying up. She's on the East Coast, folks, so it's nice and late for her. So I truly, truly very much appreciate Kate staying up and being on the show. It's always a pleasure. You have an open invitation anytime. Again, her website is handwisdom.com. She is also on Facebook if you're interested in connecting with her that way.
And Twitter,
and Twitter as well.
And so Twitter, too. I should probably put a link on my Facebook page for my Twitter page.
That's an awesome idea. So with
thank you.
You're most welcome, Kate. This is Jennifer Hellman. My website is angelsintuition.com if you want some information on who and what I'm about. Until next time, this is Jennifer Hellman wishing you, with each breath of air, you gain new insights and inspiration. Until next time, many blessings and good night.